I appreciate that very much, Brian. I think you're going to correct me on this. I think you're kind of associated with working in India, aren't you? Or do you do any work in India? Yeah. And is that how it's working there and it's working good? Or can you explain any connection with what you've taught, especially there at the last, with the work that you've done in India?
From the very beginning, when I first started going to India in 01, and going each year. And what we tried to do from the very beginning was to establish within the brethren, saying, this is your work. You've been existing. I mean, many of them on their own incomes, doing what they could, that you can continue to be this way. And we did it exactly like that for about 5 years. And then, as often is the case, there are very good-hearted brethren that believe somehow that needs to change because we work on different timelines in the U.S. than other parts of the world. And there's even terms for that. But anyone who's been out of the U.S., you know, in other countries, they don't view time like we do. If they make an appointment within the same day, they're on time, even if they said they were going to be there 10 in the morning and they arrive at 6 in the evening. It's the same 24-hour period. They feel like they're on time. But we're not that way. And we like seeing results quickly, and we start thinking that that financial support will make it quicker. Later, we did start some support over there, much to my chagrin. But we had it limited. We said for 2 years, you'll get this much, and after that, no more for this group. And that seemed to kind of work, but again, it's a bad seed to plant. Because then there's another group of men that come up and said, you supported these 5 men for 2 years. We didn't get our 2 year support. When do we get ours? And again, there's that dependence that has started. And it's hard to do. And you wouldn't have to ask too many people to find out that I'm very hard and cold-hearted, because someone agrees. But, you know, just simply because we're not passing out the money. But many of them are recognizing it. They're recognizing, yes, we can, because they are a proud people, and I think in a good way, in that we can produce, we can learn, we can spread the gospel. But then there are always others that think when they view the denominations around them, you know, where they're getting brand new buildings where there's not even a work yet. If you build a building, they will come. And that does happen. But they're not receiving the gospel. So it is working, but it is much slower than we're accustomed to or we like many times. But it's the way that it always worked for Paul. And we're staying very, I'd say hard-lined, or trying to be. There are many in the congregation that still at times think that we ought to send some, but that is what we're trying to do there. I may have just rambled, not even answered your question.
Brian, part of my question was answered with what you said there, but it's along those terms, and since you started talking about this, I thought I need to ask this, because it's been in the question, I think, in the minds of a lot of us, especially here in this country, about basically what's being taught in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and chapter 9. This idea of what was prophesied of would be in the early church, and that was that there was to be equality. Prophecies say that he that had extra, there had nothing left over, and those that had less, they had no lack. Now, I understand that the necessity in some of the other, I guess we could call third world countries, is a lot different than what we would classify necessity here in this country. And I know that we don't need to send money necessarily to the point to where people are being drawn mainly because of financial support, or being drawn because of us elevating their lifestyle. As Jesus said years ago, you know, some of them came just for the bread only and not for the word. But with that being said, in reference to the idea of equality taught in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9, how really should we consider that today? I mean, are those of us in this country, should we be thinking more on the terms if we have an excess or have maybe we could do with less than what we're utilizing or what we're using, maybe living a little too extravagantly? Maybe we should think about being able to put more in or being able to support foreign works more. How really does that equality in the church, would it be scripturally fitting for today? How do we really accomplish that, or how, in reference to what you've been discussing, how should that really work?
When it talks about the equality there in 2 Corinthians 8, I don't believe that the Apostle Paul was talking about everyone pooling their money and everyone getting an equal amount. But rather, as some have commented on this, we're talking about in proportion, just like we're taught to give as we have been prospered. He was telling the Corinthians, you know, they weren't the same financial situation that Macedonia was in. You look at, or listen to, the way I describe their liberalities. Now you ought to give in the same proportion as you have been prospered. You ought to give in an equal way in proportion, rather than you make sure if you have $10 right now, then you keep $5 and you give $5 to somebody else. He wasn't talking about that kind of equality, of everyone having the same amount. Because even when Paul wrote to Timothy about the little bit he wrote to him about finances, for one, you teach others not to desire riches, fall into temptation and snare. And then he told them what to teach the rich. Not to trust in uncertain riches. Didn't say to get rid of it all, or didn't say to spread it all out. So there in 2 Corinthians 8, I believe what he's teaching is that they're that kind of contribution, which is not the same as 1 Corinthians 16, but that this should still be kind of along the lines of as you have been prospered, just like they were giving more than they were giving upon the level that they were giving there in Macedonia. Does that make sense? I know what I'm thinking. I don't know if I'm saying it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. And I just, it seemed to me every time I've studied that in the past, it always makes me feel like that, especially those of us in this country, a lot of times there's things we could probably do without that we don't necessarily need, and we could make a better contribution financially.
We get used to
what we call necessities in this country, and it's really conveniences in other countries. So,
well, let me give an example. One time there in India, there was a request of some brethren in this one place, and all they were asking for was for 10 brethren to receive $50 each from someone, whether it be from a church or from individuals here in the States. And that $50 would cover half the cost of a slab being poured so that they could have a concrete floor rather than the dirt floor and their grass hut, mud and grass huts. So they were making that request of the church. So all they're wanting was really $500, you might say, overall. But what about the other 1.3 billion that are within the country? You know, wasn't our work or any of the Lord's work to go give people concrete floors. That's what most denominations think of in their short-term missionary trips. They're building a house, they're pouring concrete, or something like that. But we said, no, there's no sin in living the way you are, because really the majority of the rest of the village was still going to be living that way. And as soon as they saw concrete being poured for these people and found out where they got it, what do you think the rest of the village is going to be doing? It'd be just like what the Lord dealt with in John 6. They'd be following because their bellies were filled. But if someone has extra money and want to send, I think it can be used legitimately in the foreign work to still be supporting people like the Apostle Paul that are either evangelizing or they're going back and strengthening the brethren. And that way, when those men go in, they're going in with the gospel. They're not going in with finances. When they're there, there's not a surplus being brought in and injected into the work or that area. When they leave, there's not a sudden void. There's not a sudden lack of finances either, because they didn't start supplying something. But they came in with the gospel, and when they left, there is even more knowledge and more abilities within the gospel.
It could certainly be a real problem if you didn't manage that properly. But that answered my question. Thank you.
Very good, Brian. I know that we have several brethren who have a lot of experience also in visiting other countries. We have a bit of a cultural thing, a problem really in our country. We are very loving and generous, and we are wealthy. And it's a tough thing to know that on one hand, you don't want the treasure to be piling up and money in the bank account that you don't use. And it's tough to handle knowing there are brothers and sisters in Christ that really could use some help. And to deal with that, it's a struggle with all of us. All of us have had to go through that. But at the same time and experience, as well as the scripture, like you've pointed out well, have shown to us, surely we've learned, that some of the biggest problems we've had in foreign, as we call them, foreign works, has been over money. And I don't know what the answer is on the bank accounts growing and growing, but I do know that our mentality of throwing money at something will fix anything is wrong. And so I appreciate what you said. If you could say something about the contributions where there are, I hear of places that have like several hundred thousand in the bank and things like that. How some of them, you want to get them to use it for the Lord's work, and then at the same time they hear us say, well, we're not wanting to send a whole bunch into this place or that. So how do we help these brethren?
Well, just real quick on they're the big treasuries. We don't have that problem at Goshen. But for those that might, still, there are men that are wanting to go do work in other places. And there's nothing wrong with supporting that man in that place. But again, he's not to be a warehouse or an ATM in that foreign country. And he can be there and be evangelizing and building up the brethren. He can be teaching men to teach men that can teach other men. And then when they are established and it goes out to all the other places, as in Ephesus, to all of Asia, then he can leave and go somewhere else. And again, there's not going to be the shock system of he left with all the money, but it'll be that society still sustaining it as it was started. It's just that teacher.
I've heard of congregations like that. I mean, brethren saying, I know congregations right now, like other preachers have told me, so if you hear of somebody needing something, okay. But here is a verse, and I couldn't find it in time for a while ago, I'm sorry. But in 1 John 3:17, whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? And I think that's kind of the wrestling match that goes on in some of us.
Right. Well, that's where there's a different, just like the different words for poverty and poor, and also has the need, that's about the same word that is used when Jesus told the rich young ruler, he says, one thing you lack. Because he did not have it. And that's what is being spoken of there, those that lack, that do not have those things. Yes, we feel sorry for those who don't have as much as we do. But the Lord taught the disciples to pray, give me this day my daily bread. We've both been in places where, like that, but I've never had to exist that way. But I hope that I would be able to, since, you know, yeah, I have a freezer that has quite a bit of food in it, but that's not a necessity. So there's the difference, and I can't ship a freezer full of food over there.
Thank you, Brian, for your study. It was really good. I'm aware of a congregation I've seen that was very zealous about this method of doing evangelism from a biblical perspective and came to the conclusion that the foreign evangelists that they were sending monthly support to, that they wanted to phase that out because they wanted him to accept support from brethren in his native country. In this scenario, when the American church let this brother know that were their intentions, he was almost shocked that this would be happening, and the questions were, where would my support come from? It's not possible to have support from these people in their poverty. How are they going to be able to supply these needs? My question would be, for congregations who do desire to see the foreign preachers that they support start to be taken on by the native congregations they work with, how do you go from American to native support in such a way whenever maybe they haven't taught their congregations to, as you said, give yourself first the Lord, 2 Corinthians 8:15. Maybe they haven't taught that. Maybe they are just comfortable with the arrangement. How do you shake that up a little bit?
Sometimes it seems as though, and that's mentioned more like by some of the writers of these books, for one, it can be a prestigious thing to receive dollars when you're a person, a citizen of another country. You're receiving support from the U.S. So it can be a status. And they may not be anxious to lose that status. May not be teaching, like say, the giving as they should. Another thing is that quite often we are supporting people like that above the level of that area. So we have created a financial environment that's impossible for that group to sustain. So that's a problem that we created as well, something where man often creates. But one thing that I've noticed in other countries many times too, when it comes to jobs, now it wouldn't be enjoyable, but they can find, and they're so capable of many physical labor type of jobs, that wouldn't, the same type of availability wouldn't be here like it is there. And they can find something, again, necessity. Necessity is the mother of invention. Or it can mother of motivation when you realize that your income is going to be cut off. It can be phased out slowly. I've known of places that said, we'll continue this amount for 6 months. After that, it's going to be cut in half for 3 months. And after that, you're on your own. And that could be motivation when they have absolutes. But a lot of times, also what I've seen, they don't believe it. Because it rarely happens. Even when you tell them, they often don't believe it. And sometimes it doesn't happen because then they may have contact with other brethren. And they just arrange it through a more sympathetic source. But still, you can just set a plan and go through with it. Slowly cut it down. Teach them as you do it. Teach the scriptures. Have them teach the brethren. And if they really believe that they're a man that is reliable and worthy, then they'll start working the same way.
Now, I know, obviously, there's things such as, you know, trying to build church buildings and such that you reference, like concrete slab. Is there a difference between things such as that and also supporting local people versus supporting preachers that happen to be local? Because, obviously, they're supporting preachers to go out to foreign countries, would that be the same as supporting somebody who happens to live there in the country already?
Yeah, I think there's a difference in us sending one of our brethren to those other countries to establish or strengthen the churches There's a difference in doing that and then supporting one that is right there, the native of that country. That's what we never see Paul doing. We never see Paul arranging for that kind of support. We see him arranging for a specific emergency type of need. But again, that seemed to be just that. It seemed to be an exception to the rule. But Paul was supported to go around. He expected to be supported when he passed through Corinth those times. He said, you support Timothy when he comes through. He wrote to Titus to send those men and to make sure that they were equipped with their necessities upon the trip and to go. But we never see a letter being written to Ephesus saying there's some brethren that want to preach in the area of Achaia and we would like for you to support the brethren in Achaia to preach in their area. That's where there's the difference.
I think that we would all agree that we are a pattern-believing people. You know, we believe the New Testament establishes patterns that we look to and we follow. And the book of Acts is a book of patterns. It's a book of patterns for conversions, obviously. Book of pattern for evangelism. And I think in Brian's teachings tonight, he's trying to help us understand that it's a book of patterns as well for support. And how we approach these foreign works financially and things we've done in the past and things we need to do in the future. And, you know, if we're going to appeal to consistency, that it's important to follow the pattern in evangelism, and it's important to follow the pattern in salvation, conversion. It's equally important to follow the pattern in support. You know, I think we all would agree we've made mistakes in the past, and there are things that we need to change and want to change, and I guess maybe the thing we have to realize is that from this point on, we need to determine that when we do new works, we need to try to establish them properly and avoid these problems. And one other thing to consider, you know, in our supporting brethren overseas, somehow they get the idea that they're going to be supported for life. You know, if they're going to be supported, they're going to receive it. And yet we don't necessarily have that feeling here, at least I never did. When I was supported, you know, as preachers, obviously we're thankful for our support, but I never thought that a congregation was obligated to support me the rest of my life. I knew very well, and some of you do as well, that we might not be supported 2 years from now or 5 years from now. And I think, as you pointed out with some of these brethren, that when we do support, we need to put a limit. You know, at least be up front and say, you know, we're going to support you for this amount of time, and then go from there. In your studies, and looking at the church at Antioch, that, you know, Paul always seemed to come back to the church at Antioch on those missionary journeys. And, mm-hmm. You know, I don't like the word sponsoring congregation or sponsoring church, so forth. But they did seem to be a congregation that sent him out, that mm-hmm. helped him in that. Is there ever any indication that Paul asked the church at Antioch to support preachers, to support these foreign works that he was establishing?
None that I'm aware of.
I was talking with Brother Tony Melton a while back about mission work he'd been involved in out of Mexico. And he said, you know, one of the problems that they had was they had set up this artificial support system for the preachers. They had all these guys on payroll. And they started getting letters from these preachers asking for a raise and for more support. They weren't getting enough. And he said, one thing that we did about that was we said, you go to your local brethren and tell them how much you're making and see if they think you need a raise. And I think what happens sometimes, and what I've seen, and a little bit that I've been involved in, is that you have preachers that are being supported, and they don't have any financial responsibility to their home congregation. They don't really see any responsibility to their home congregation at all. If I want to leave here and go work somewhere else, I'll get the support to do that. And the brethren here, they don't have to know what I'm making. I think about myself. You know, the brethren at home know what I make, and I'm beholden to them, and if they decide that they're going to cut off my support, they're the ones that are going to cut off my support, and I have to move on from there and find work to do or do something. But it sets up a system where a preacher's not really responsible to anybody. I just thought I'd mention that. What's your thoughts?
Well, I know we suggested things like that in Honduras as well, and some of them just came out and said, I don't want the brethren to know what I make. You know? Right. Well, they knew they were making a whole lot more than the brethren. And the brethren sure weren't going to write a letter saying, give them some more support. They found out how much they were receiving. You know, now, there were a few to where, I mean, they were workers. The brethren appreciated them. And in a situation like that, of course, I think it's usually better if that system is already in place, but it ought to be, how much can the local congregation be supporting you? Let them start making up the difference. You know, again, then still continuing to build up the dependence. Because with the dependence, when you create a dependence, there's also a created dominance as well that's foreign to the Scriptures. So it's one of those deals that kind of snowballs. You know, it creates another type of dominance and control, you know, from a situation like that. So the dangers can multiply.
Thank you, Brian. I don't know if I'm opening Pandora's box with this question. I certainly don't hope to do that. But earlier this year, or maybe it was last year, letters went across the country requesting money for grape juice for congregations in parts of Africa. And you know, I've talked to several preachers about their thoughts on that subject. I talked to one very recently who was very vocal in his support of that system, where the American congregations, even if it needs to be long-term, would purchase grape juice. I mean, he said these brethren, they can't commune without our support in this. They would just not be able to commune. And you know, I know there's a lot of discussion on this issue, but I wanted to kind of open that up and ask what your thoughts on that. Is that a, first of all, even a scriptural concept that churches would get into a long-term support situation where they're buying grape juice for other congregations across the world? And what are your thoughts specifically as to the situation as it stands now?
Well, I know in most every other country, with about whatever kind of grape juice they have, it's expensive for the common people. I know it's expensive. But I still believe it would be a situation when the brethren are taught correctly about their means and their giving, that there would be a way for the brethren in that society to still be able to fulfill their needs. I have no personal knowledge of the facts of the African grape juice thing as far as what it costs, if it's available, if it's within the country but expensive or whatever. But it seems to me like it's another type of dependence that's been created in many ways. But again, I don't know. But no, I don't know of a continued ongoing support or supply type of thing other than spiritual supplies as far as to be able to see from the Scriptures. But I don't see anything else. It seems to be an exception to the rule when or if it happens.
Good talk, Brian. I think you're on the mark. I think it's easier to say than it is to do, but
oh, yeah.
I think you had some good thoughts. On this grape juice thing, I thought I'd just mention this. I don't know if Jerry or Dwayne's going to comment about this, but we were just talking about this at dinner tonight, and on a recent trip over there, Jerry and Dwayne took grape juice to a number of churches in the northern part of Malawi. They all paid cash for them. They weren't even expecting it to come, hadn't been saving up their money, and they bought it. You can buy grape juice in the country. And it's a sacrifice. It's expensive. But those brethren are all carrying around cell phones,
exactly,
and boom boxes and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's an expense. And there may be cases where we need to purchase some and subsidize it. There might be a few cases where people can't afford it. But it's not something that needs to be done on a $100,000 a year deal.
No.
And people need to realize part of what we're talking about here is not just whether or not to support preachers. We're talking about relieving the needy. And people don't understand in a third world country what's needy and what's not needy. Yes, there are some extreme cases. Paul dealt with a couple of them or so in the New Testament. And he said, you have money, this equality thing that Donnie was talking about, you have money here, I need you to send it over here for now so that later on, if you have a need, potentially,
reversed.
They might be able to return that. But it's an emergency situation, not an equaling of everybody's money. And besides all that, you cannot raise the standard of living of every Christian in Malawi. It's not possible. There are too many of them. We don't have enough money. When we sent $2 million over there, people got money to last them about 3 weeks, and the line was out the door, and some of the people that got in line weren't even members of the church.
Right.
You know, and you cannot raise people's standard of living. We have to accept that. All we can do is preach the gospel, and we need to facilitate that. Having said that, yes, there are some emergencies that are temporary and one-time deals that you might need to help in. And we've all done that from time to time in a foreign country. But you can't make it a national project. We don't have enough money to do that, and it's not what we ought to be doing anyway, and you don't have anything. You quit giving the money after you start in a situation like that, and you won't have anybody. They'll go somewhere where they do give money.
Right.
Anyway, appreciated your talk.
Thanks, Ed. Some had asked about some of the books that would be good on this topic. And still, as we all know, the very best book to follow is the one we always proclaim anyway, is the Bible. Just study through, like Paul working with Philippi. See what he did, take note of what he did and what he didn't do. And then we need to copy those things. For other readings, there are some I have. Well, there's five of these. That quote that I read in the very beginning said that was from a book that was written 100 years ago. And it sounded like it's talking about us today. So it's not a new problem. And it's a problem that denominations and all groups have been working on for a long time. Most of them have given up and just keep sending the money. But I have Brother Don graciously cut out a little list. There's a list of these books. I'll leave these up here for a little bit if you want to look at them. There's a list of what I think about the best books right now that I've read on this subject. You'd just like to familiarize yourself with some of it. But there's one of the examples I just mentioned real quick in here. A fellow talks about being in Africa. There was a need that came up. Someone needed penicillin that would cost $8. And it was something that was literally life or death. And in the beginning of the book, he gives this example. And he had to be catching a plane. He reached in his pocket. He just gave them the money and left, thinking, I've done a good thing. And he says, I didn't realize then, but I did more harm than good. And later in the book, he explains why. A death didn't come from it. The person was saved physically. But he did point out how he robbed the people of their opportunity to work together, to provide for the need of their own friends. He robbed them of the joy of giving. Just a lot of different things like that that he learned the hard way. So just a little bit extra to think about. Thank you.